you maybe have more chance of succeeding as an individual if you're working as part of a team, which is really smooth and functioning well, actually increases your chance of being individually successful. Once you buy into that idea, which is what lone wolves never buy into, but once you buy into that idea, then you can be in control of your own individual success.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm joined today by Alex Zobeli and Matt Nichols. Alex and Matt are the founders of Cornerstone Recruitment Japan. Cornerstone is focused on placing bilingual professionals in a wide range of market-leading companies across all sectors. They're one of the fastest-growing recruitment companies in Japan with a team of 40 and the only recruitment firm with backing from a major investment bank in Tokyo. Matt, Alex, welcome. Great to meet you.
Great to meet you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. My pleasure. Yeah, I'm really interested in what you guys do and how you've launched a fast-growing company during the pandemic, which I'm sure was challenging. Could you guys just briefly share the story of how and why you launched the business?
Yeah, you want to go, mate? Yeah, okay. So I think, I mean, to take a step back, we both worked for a major Japanese recruitment business before called Recruit, which you know, is a huge business. They own Indeed.com, they own Glassdoor, fourth biggest recruitment company in the world. And we were brought in to launch their bilingual recruitment division. So the division dealing with international companies in Tokyo. And we took it over. It was around 15 people. It was making a loss. It had a couple of MDs, which hadn't done as well. And then 4 years later, we were 220 people making $50 million USD. So off the back of that track record, we started to, you know, have an idea of setting up our own business, talking to investors. And we got, you know, we got really lucky that we got some backing from a major investment bank, major international investment bank, with the idea that we could do the same thing again with our own company. And that brought us to setting up Cornerstone.
Yeah, so we launched almost 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got 40 people now. We are the fastest growing recruitment business in Japan. And our goal is basically is to do it again. You know, we want to build another 200 people business and be a major player really in the, you know, the Japan market again.
That's it. Yeah, we've already signed for a 90 person office from January. So we're serious about it. We're going to make it happen again. And yeah, it's been fun 2 years.
All right. Awesome. I love how you've already, you know, signed up for a 90 person office. You know, that's commitment. Like, you guys are, it's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So I'm interested in your personal stories, because I'm guessing that you guys aren't Japanese. How did you come to be recruiting in Japan, and why this market?
I'm Italian, so I actually never really worked in Italy. I went to live in London when I was 23, I think. I did recruitment in London for about like 7 years, I think. Work with Blue Arrow mainly in London, so I was doing contract recruitment for catering and hospitality. Then I met my wife, Japanese lady. And we decided to come to Japan to start a family, really. Came to Japan. I did 3 years of Hayes. I got headhunted by Matt, actually, at RGF.
Yeah.
We worked together at RGF. And then, you know, I think we got along pretty well. So we decided then to start our business. That's pretty much my story.
Fantastic. I'll find your story in a second, Matt. What I'm amazed at is you guys have, you know, had to learn, you know, a whole nother language and you're doing business in not your mother tongue, which must be, takes courage and really fascinating. Matt, how about yourself? How did you end up in Japan?
Yeah. I mean, also started my recruitment career in England and eventually had my own recruitment business in England, which was a decent size. And I sold it. It didn't work for a couple of years. And I was thinking about what I wanted to do. And I used to be an English teacher in Japan when I first graduated. So I always kind of fancied coming back. So just took the plunge, came to Tokyo, interviewed with some of the big firms, got a job with Robert Walters as a director. And then became managing director of the part of Recruit's business we spoke about, met Alex, and here we are.
Fantastic. That's awesome. So could you guys just give us some context on, because I think a lot of people aren't really familiar with the Japanese recruitment market, even though I believe it's the second biggest in the world after the US. Is that right?
Yeah, it is.
Second biggest. So like what's it like recruiting in Japan?
Yeah, I think it's a very unique market, to be honest, very like totally different from Europe or even other Asian countries, I would say. I think for what we do is, we actually really specialize and work on a very thin layer of actually the overall recruitment landscape, So what we do is we work with Fortune 500 type of companies, so global, mainly global company. We do work with some Japanese company, but predominantly is, again, Fortune 500 type of companies across all sectors. And we work the middle to senior management type of positions, so managers, directors, country managers type of roles. And the type of candidates that we place are mainly Japanese people that speak English, So we work on the bilingual recruitment market. So usually, again, it's Japanese people that work or have worked in international firms. Maybe they studied abroad when they went to university, but people that speak English on a day-to-day basis with, in the business is also dealing with HQ.
Yeah, I think it's a market that's got a few quirks, definitely. So it's incredibly candidate short for a couple of reasons. Japanese candidates famously don't change jobs very often. So that's a limiting factor. They have the job for life mentality still a little bit in Japan. And really there aren't that many Japanese candidates that actually speak English. The level of English in the country is incredibly low. And then you throw in the fact that maybe LinkedIn is nowhere near as successful or as big in other countries, it makes it incredibly difficult for even some of the best brands, the best international brands, to source their own candidates. So, yeah, that's where we come in, basically. And actually, your position as a recruiter in Japan is, I think it's seen as a little bit of a higher level kind of job than it might be in other countries, because you're such a valued resource to even some of the biggest brands. There's no way they can attract candidates. So it makes it a really fun market. And a lucrative one too, because it is so candidate short. Our fees are 40%. We've seen fees up to 100% on occasions.
Wow!
So it's a really interesting place to be a recruiter.
So what would be a situation where the client would be open to paying 100% fee?
They come to you. I mean, we just got a client now which said, "Hey, look, we need to hire 10 positions. We'll pay you 60% rather than the 40% we have agreed." And on occasion, for very niche positions, we've had clients offer kind of campaigns where they're going to pay 100%.
Yeah, maybe it could be a case where, mainly it's with IT companies, IT or gaming. I think we have these kind of opportunities where they have a big project and they need to hire 10, 20, 30 engineers, really. I think also, Japan is still a little bit behind, I think, in terms of diversity and inclusion. So there are not many women in the workforce, and clients, they're starting to wake up a little bit in that sense.
Yeah.
So maybe placing a female executive, could come at premium. And some company, they're trying to, again, increase that diversity and inclusion, and they might pay premium for that particular type of candidates.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Just shows the power of market dynamics, supply and demand. In most countries in the world, clients are trying to get you to reduce your fee, right? They're always going to push back and say, "Oh, well, 30%, we normally pay 20, or if you charge 20, they're going to try and get you down to 15. And in your case, clients are the ones who are actually instigating the increase. They're, to try and motivate you guys to really dedicate the commit to filling these jobs. It's fascinating.
It's so true. I mean, because it's much easier to get jobs here than it is in any other market. Every single client, big international client, is recruiting for bilingual talent. And it's in such short supply. They actually do need to motivate you as a recruiter to prioritize
certain roles, certain companies and
their positions. you know, it's so beautiful because Japanese candidates also don't really like to apply for jobs directly. They much prefer it's a cultural thing. They prefer the indirect approach of dealing with a recruiter. So even if you're a top brand and you're putting adverts on LinkedIn,
you're not going to get much quality out of it.
You're not going to get anyone, yeah.
I think in general, I think the Japanese candidate, and I think especially the type of recruitment that we do, they love, I think, the experience of working with an agent, you know, the fancy dinners, you know, we trust, for instance, a bit, of course, less now with the pandemic, but pre-pandemic, our job is very heavy on entertainment, you know, both on the candidate and the client side. So building long-lasting relationship, you know, with candidates and clients over dinners, lunches, and so on is extremely important. So people, it's a very enjoyable type of work, I think.
Fascinating. No, that's cool. It's sounds like the good old days, like the sort of old fashioned way of doing recruiting where you're actually meeting in person, you're going for lunch, you're, you know, entertaining your clients and candidates. Cool. I've read a report. There's a organization, I think they're called Staffing Industry Analysts, and they have different, you know, sort of industry analysis of the global recruiting and staffing industries. And I read a list of the biggest staffing companies in the world. And in the top 10, there's actually a few Japanese companies on that list, which I hadn't expected, but now I'm starting to understand, you know, why that might be.
You know, a huge economy, very, very stable economy as well. You know, it doesn't really go up or down. It's just really solid. So the market is huge.
Cool. Yeah. So listen, guys, you're specialist in scaling businesses. You did it once before very successfully, and now the aim is to do it again. What are the critical success factors or the keys to being able to scale, like you described, going from 15 people to 220 people in 4 years? That's not easy to pull off. How did you guys do that?
I think, I mean, we both maybe add a couple of points, but I think there's a few factors. Some of them are going to sound a little cliched, I guess. You know, you hear these kind of things, but it worked for us. I think for me, the key is you've got to set the goal that you want to achieve for the business really early, and you've really got to commit to it. And it's got to stay part of the fabric of the business at every single step of the way. So if you're going to be a 250-person business, if that's what you think you can achieve, That's the goal on day one, and all your actions, everything you do is with scalability in mind. All the decisions you make have scalability in mind so that you're not limiting your success. And I'll let Alex add a few more points. But I think the other thing for me also is your first 50 people are absolutely crucial if you're going to scale a big business. Your first 50 people should contain most of your future senior leadership team. Your culture's fairly set, I think, after 50 people. So, you know, of course, it's always important, no matter how big the business is, to hire good people. But if you're going to scale a business rapidly, 0 to 50 is tough. 50 to 100 is less tough. 100 to 200, easy, if you get the first bit right.
Yeah, I think
Interesting. I've never heard it described that way before. Go ahead, Alex. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I think the first 50 is crucial because, you know, especially what we did before, especially if it's the first time you do it, you have to sell it, you know, because of course you can have all these, you know, big dreams of, you know, building a company or whatever. But at the beginning, you're kind of unknown really, and people, you know, they don't have the track record. It's difficult for people to visualize it and to really believe what you're going to do. I think in general, like, you need to have the ambition to do it. And, you know, I think not everybody wants to have a big business, and having a big business and scale it in a short period of time is extremely stressful. and it's lots of hard work. And especially if you do it for somebody else, like we did the first time, I think even from a financial point of view, you know, you don't really get the reward, I think, you know, from having a 50 people to a 200 people business, your compensation doesn't really change that much, you know?
Yeah.
So you're kind of doing you're doing it really because you kind of want to do it, you know? I think that's been our success factor, I think, you know, the fact that we just really wanted to do it, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
Amazing. So like really wanting to do it, I think is this isn't going to happen by accident, right? It's something that you've got a very specific, clear vision of what you're trying to achieve from day one. You going into it knowing this is going to be challenging, it's going to be stressful, it's going to be difficult, but we are going to do it. And it's just wanting to and deciding and making that commitment early. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it's committing to it. That's why we've signed for this office from January. You know, that's another statement of intent, and it's another kind of marker where everybody in the business realizes this is really happening. This is really happening. You know, this we've shown people around the office. This is where we're going to be in January. We're going to fill it by the end of next year. It's about that.
What's awesome is growth is infectious in the sense that people can like they're part. They feel like the energy, the excitement. They're part of something that's like really got momentum, and then it inspires people to want to, you know, perform well, and they can see the career path for themselves as well. If they perform, then there's going to be opportunities for them to advance within the business as well. So it's cool. Let's talk about the first 50 then. How do you sell the vision and get people excited about joining what could be perceived as a higher risk situation, right? If they're working for a very large, stable business, they've got security, they know kind of what the culture is, and you're asking them to jump on board to something that is, you know, there's more uncertainty. How have you guys pulled that off?
I think at the beginning with our previous company, to a certain extent, we had a really well-known brand. You know, in Japan, if you speak with anybody, the Recruit brand is, you know, is like a Toyota. Everybody knows it. It's safe. So even if our business was the bilingual arm of it, you still have that kind of brand recognition. I think it was difficult to sell at the beginning the fact that, you know, we were going to grow. And I think to a certain extent, you also have the negative side that some people don't want to work for a Japanese business, you know.
And the fact that it hadn't grown for 5 or 6 years, you know. So
previous MDs tried to sell the dream and tried to make it. They didn't make it. So the brand was, I don't know, had mixed reviews, I think. So the beginning was a bit difficult. And also a few other things, like maybe the commission scheme we had in place was not amazing, you know, for top billers, you know, it was very comfortable for maybe more the managerial level, but like really attracting the top billers was a bit difficult.
Are we talking about your previous situation?
Now, I think in Japan, I think people know us, you know, they know. You know, we hire a lot of people from competitors. You know, we hire from competitors. We kind of have our own brand. You know, so people know that we did it before. They know what they get when they come and work for us. And of course, also having, you know, a major investment again from, you know, from an international bank, you know, it kind of gives you that reassurances that, you know, these guys are going to do it again. They're going to do it properly. They have the right backings, you know. And I think we also have a bit more experience this time.
I think so. I think it's just easier to, once you've done it, right, it's much easier to then put in real terms exactly how this is going to impact somebody's career. So we have a track record. We have the investment. So it's not like you're joining a boutique and it's the owner's money and he's trying to sell you the dream, but you're thinking, yeah, but you still got to pay for it yourself, right? So, you know, I think the business appeared more stable to people than perhaps a normal startup because of those facts. And because we'd experienced it before, we can really lay out the benefits of growing joining a super fast growing company. You know, it's brilliant for somebody's career. If you join a business and you do well, and the business is growing rapidly, your career is going to be significantly better at a faster rate than if you join a bigger established company. So, and like Alex said, we already had the reputation of having done it. People know what we achieved in the market. And so second time around was a bit easier in a strange kind of way.
Before I go to my next question, I'd like to share one of the keys to my success in recruitment and in business. You may have noticed that a lot of the people I interview on this show have a coach. That's not a coincidence. Most high achievers have a coach, including me. I've worked with various coaches over the last 20 years, and it's been a huge factor in my own personal and business growth. Here's why. Sometimes it's hard to see the forest for the trees, and it really helps to take a step back and look at how you can improve the business and get a fresh outside perspective from someone who's bringing new ideas and insights to the table. Plus, as a business owner, who is holding you accountable and helping you stay on track? So I want to encourage you, if you're not already working with a coach, get one. It doesn't have to be me. There are plenty of amazing coaches out there. Just find someone who you believe will add measurable value to your business and can help you get to the next level. If you do want to explore a coaching relationship with me, then you're welcome to apply for a free 30-minute strategy session at recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. This is not a sales call. My number one objective is to help you to get clear on your goals, identify the roadblocks that are holding you back, and create a strategic plan to increase your billings and grow your business. I promise you'll leave our session feeling focused, re-energized, and excited to take your business to the next level. You can apply at www.recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. One thing I find is that although we advise clients as recruiters, we advise clients on their employer value proposition and how to sell the opportunity and what they need to put in place to attract the top talent, many recruitment businesses don't listen to their own advice. They don't actually know what their own employer value prop is or, you know, what's going to attract people. So what have you guys put in place that is part of the story that you're able to tell to candidates to get to attract them to want to come and talk to you?
I think it depends on the level of the person that's joining, honestly. I think I'll deal with the junior end and you can deal with the senior end. But I think if you're, so we just started to hire new grads and we've had amazing success with the new grads that join our business. So the first new grad we hired in January is our number two biller. She's absolutely
killing it. Wow.
Just got promoted today. And I think the value add.
Wait, so they've been with you for 5 months?
Yeah.
Wow, incredible. Especially that's a whole nother. Okay.
Especially the slow market like Japan, right? And I think the value add we give to inexperienced people is, you know, imagine you join one of the big players, right? And you go through the corporate training program and you're going to get, it's good, of course, all the modules are there, but you're going to get trained by a corporate trainer in their business who, with all due respect, maybe was an extra recruiter that was decent, but not a top biller. But right now, in the state of the size of our business right now, we have exactly the same. We've worked for big businesses. Our training program is exactly the same from a module to module basis as you would get in a big company. But you get trained by me and Alex, quite simply. We run all the training. We've got, you know, 20 years recruitment experience. And it has a massive impact, without being arrogant, on new people to get trained by people that are very successful in the market that they're in. And I always say to people, you know, if you joined us in our previous company when we were 220 people, we would have not spoken to us that much, quite frankly, because we were managing a massive business. We certainly wouldn't have been trained by us. And, you know, we're still in an office where we've hired a lot of top billers. Me and Alex are on the phone. We're back to billing as we grow the business and leading by example. So I think the experience you get as an inexperienced person or recruiter is pretty special and different from what you might get in a big business.
Yeah, I think for the experienced one, I think we are, as Matt said, you know, we're very technical recruiters, you know, both Matt and I are, you know, top billers, you know, so I think, and the way we approach, like, you know, management is very technical, I think. But I think also what is really important is the fact that we're big student, honestly, of the market. You know, we're people that we're really passionate about the job. You know, we love recruitment. And I think in Japan, sometimes you have a lot of maybe managers and directors and so on that they came here as English teacher. They overachieved a little bit and they never had that, I don't know, that thing, that X factor, like we call it. And I think senior people, they appreciate that. They appreciate the fact that, you know, we love what we do. We're really good at what we do. And we've been around, you know, so we work for big companies. We started a business before. So we're very mature, I think, in the way we actually manage experienced people without going into micromanagement or give really advice, you know, that, that they can benefit. And we can scale quickly, you know. So we're hiring a lot of, I would say, ambitious managers that have not reached their peak yet. So usually this layer of managers, they need a little bit of guidance and they need somebody that can help them hiring. And that's, I think, what we bring to the table, the reputation, the, you know, the connection that we have.
We're very clear, right? If we, when we hire somebody in a senior consultant role or a management position, and they have ambitions to grow a team, we're just incredibly clear about the hiring roadmap. When we're going to hire people, we take care of all of that. Exactly what they have to do to achieve that. What they have to do to keep up with the growth of the business, also, which is very motivating. So I think, you know, we've had a lot of success hiring senior consultants with a very short-term target to get promoted to manager and then an immediate roadmap of how many people we're going to hire. And I think if you really stick to that, you lay it out and you stick to it, you get these people bought in and they, you know, they really appreciate that you're living up to your word and giving them the opportunity, which they deserve and they've earned. But I think you still get a lot of loyalty back from that.
Amazing. What's the sort of mixture when you're hiring between experienced people versus, you know, grads or less experienced folks that you're training from scratch?
I think we're very quality driven. You know, we simply want to hire the best, so we don't really compromise on quality. I think that that's a big thing for us. You know, we're good at spotting talent. I think we're good at identifying kind of what works for us, you know, the kind of people that will enjoy working with us and vice versa. So I think, I don't know, for me, that's kind of the secret, really. We know what we want. We know the type of person we want. We're good at finding them and we're good at selling them. And we're not cheap, honestly. There are lots of firms, I think, you know, they're a bit cheap. You know, we offer really good salaries and, you know, the commission scheme is really good. And we want to make sure that our people are really well rewarded because it's hard work. Again, scaling a business, it looks beautiful from the outside, but when you're in the inside, you know, there's a lot of work. So I think you have to be paid for that.
See, I think the split's kind of evolving, I would say. So when we launched the business, mainly experienced hires, people we'd worked with previously, top billers from competitors that wanted to maybe take a bit of a risk and be part of this story. But as we evolve, we're looking at, I don't know, almost a 60-40 split. I think 60% maybe inexperienced, actually, as we move forward.
You we're know, kind of 50-50 right now, I think. Yeah. And we're probably going to edge it more towards sort of like the new grad market, which for us has been, again, an amazing success. So we want to kind of replicate that.
Let's talk about that. So taking a new grad to top biller in 5 months is very fast. Like most recruitment businesses, it takes 3 to 6 months for someone even just to, you know, start hitting their target. And like, let's say 3 months to be, if it's a 360 role, 3 months to bill and 6 months to kind of be fully up and running. And then 12, like even 12 to 24 months, I'd say you're still an apprentice, really. You're not like, you haven't mastered your craft yet for the first few years. What does the training involve that allows you to help people to accelerate that timeline?
I think it's partly down to the individual, obviously. You know, she's been with us for 6 months and she's clearly an absolute superstar, which helps. You know, no matter how good your training is, if the individual's amazing, that's good. I think we only operate a 360 model. Even in a candidate short market, we don't really believe in the researcher model. And I think what we're really good at is, yes, we operate the standard module-based training where we train people on every aspect of the job. But we also have a rule where we hire people that are capable of doing a 360 role. And that's what Alex was referring to in the quality. And we give them a client on day one. Because you get a client and a job on day one. And of course, your classroom-based training is going on in the background over 3 months, but you're working closely with an experienced manager or me and Alex to, you know, to develop this client, shortlist candidates, start sending them out, learn how to pitch jobs. So we just don't wait, basically. We try and hire people who are good enough to handle that and the pressure that comes with it. And then we have this dual approach to training where it's on the job massively, but also the classroom based in the background.
So there's this 3 month training process? When you say classroom-based, like what does that entail?
It includes everything from how to, where to sit in a Japanese business meeting, not so, so as you don't offend somebody, how to exchange business cards, right through to all the basics of recruitment, how to screen a job, how to interview a candidate, how to generate leads, through to how to successfully pitch a retainer, you know, every single technical aspect that you would imagine.
Fantastic. And is that done in like cohorts? So like you're people at a similar level in the business, or how do you organize that?
Yeah, we have different levels for the seniority of the person. So we have, again, different layers for like associates to managers, you know, of course the training will be different. And that's kind of what we develop, you know, a layer system type of training, basically.
Yeah.
And so in a typical week, how much during that first 3 months, how much time are they spending like doing workshops and going through the modules? And how much time are they spending working at their desk, at their manager's side on real jobs?
I think the theory is pretty smooth. You know, we try to, I think we have probably like around 30 sessions spread over the first 3 months, a bit heavy on the first month. But the sessions are like around an hour each, I would say, maybe an hour. A little longer than an hour. So it's very heavy on actually the practical side of the job, you know? And that's, I think, what has been really good for us, you know? But also, I think, of course, you know, the quality of the managers that we have in place is really good. And I think just the time, you know, that these people, you know, the consultant gets with the manager, especially for the first 3 months, it is really like a lot of good time where maybe I think if you join a big firm or a boutique, it might not be as structured and as consistent, I would say.
Fantastic. So how do you know that someone is going to be successful with you? You know, how do you evaluate and know, yes, this was the right person, or I think we had a mishire here.
Yeah, you must have asked that to a lot of people, Mark, right? You know, a lot of that's the classic question for any recruitment business owner or director or whatever, because it's
yeah, especially, you know, early on, like it's maybe too soon to judge based on billings, right? Yeah. And so you're going on other factors. What are you looking for someone to accomplish, let's say in their first, you know, during that training period, the first 3 months?
I think firstly, I would say I think we're good at recruiting people. We've had zero staff turnover in the last 14 months. And that's not because we're super soft or anything like that. You know, we just hired the right people. And I think, you know, Alex will probably elaborate on this, but we've got really simple values for what we expect from somebody in the early part of their career. It's really simple. It's, do you work hard? Do you have a good attitude? Can you be a team player? Are you a nice person? Which may sound strange, but we want to hire nice people for our business. We work with these people all the time. I think if you're displaying those qualities with the training and the effort we're going to put into you, you're going to succeed.
Yeah, I think for us, we like to hire. We're super salesy, of course, right? You know, that's the nature of the job, right? So we're looking for people that have, again, that thing, you know, that panache, you know. And I think we're good at finding, you know, those, you know, that raw talent. You know, I think recruitment, you know, you can teach the techniques and everything, but you kind of need to have it a little bit in you, that salesiness, that, I mean, that zest, you know. And I think we're good at finding those kind of people, you know. And that has been probably our success so far.
Awesome. So you're hiring the right people in the first place. And then, you know, so you're looking for people who are working hard, great attitude, and also nice people. I think there was a fourth one.
A team player. You know, we're a team-based
team player.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Which in recruiting, it can attract people who are more selfish or, you know, just going to focus on me, right? So how do you balance that? Because you do want people who are ambitious and want to, you know, achieve, but also who are going to be team players. Those two don't always go hand in hand.
No, you're right. I think, you know, we would avoid the lone wolf type of person. They're pretty easy to spot, You know, I think they're really easy to spot. So if someone's a top biller from a competitor, but they're not a team player at all, they're a lone wolf, we're not interested. You know, we can do without the billing, basically. So the team thing's massive for us. And I really think it's possible to, because we have a good individual commission scheme, I still think it's really possible to find somebody with that individual ambition where they're rewarded individually for what they do, but they're still mature enough as a person, or they're nice enough as a person to actually play a part in a team, to not worry about the fact that we don't have candidate ownership, to make recommendations to their colleagues about
showing leads.
Yeah, leads and candidates they should be placing, to be happy when their colleagues do well. I think it's possible to get both, you know, and some people totally. Are slightly different ends of that scale, but I think within that area, we can find those people.
I think what we did really well is actually creating a culture that kind of self-police that, you know. So I think when people come in and join us, they want that, you know. They really want to work as a team. That a lot of the time, that's why people actually join us, because we're slightly more team-based compared to your average boutique, I think. And I think when people join, they're very, you know, well surprised, you know, and happy that everybody is, again, is ambitious, that everybody wants to be the top biller. That's it.
Yeah. We really celebrate the individual achievements. We've still got, you know, we got our billing list on the door when you leave the office. We're still old school from that perspective. It's the individual achievements are celebrated, but it's within that team environment. And I think what people realize is actually, you maybe have more chance of succeeding as an individual if you're working as part of a team, which is really smooth and functioning well, actually increases your chance of being individually successful. Once you buy into that idea, which is what lone wolves never buy into, but once you buy into that idea, then you can be in control of your own individual success, I think.
What are some of the ways in which the teamwork benefits the business? Like, can you give an example of a characteristic of a smooth and functional or high performing team?
I think that for me, it's a candidate short market that we operate in, right? So generating good candidates is absolutely essential. And we don't have candidate ownership. You know, there's no hiding candidates in the drawer. There's none of that stuff. I mean, the first recruitment company I worked for, we had candidates on cards, and you'd lock your box at the end of the day and you know, people be fighting over the cards. You know, so everybody has, as long as everybody equally pulls their weight in terms of candidate generation, then you personally benefit, because you can have any candidate that the team generates is your candidate. And we run a candidate review where, you know, as a team, you're going to sit down and discuss every single candidate that you and your colleagues have met in the previous week. And the team will make recommendations to each other about, you know, this candidate would be good for your job. So if you're an inexperienced person, you really benefit from listening to your colleagues, them giving you advice about where you should place a candidate. And I think if you just accept that you're not going to be limited, you're only limited by your own ability, everybody's pulling their weight, you have access to a lot more candidates in this market, then it's so smooth and you're going to be more successful.
Yeah, I think what really helped us, I think, is working for some of the larger businesses in the past. I think really benefited us, because we're running a really smooth operation from in terms of like our recruitment methodology. Like Matt mentioned, you know, the candidate review is absolutely, you know, a huge part in, you know, in our methodology, and we're running it really smooth. Also, we're very, I think, a focus on working the system properly, having a good database, operating the database well. So I think all this structure really helps a recruiter to be productive quicker.
Yeah.
Amazing. So you talked about how 0 to 50 is the hardest part, and then 50 to 100 is a little bit easier, and then 100 to 200, you said easy. So 0 to 50, we've talked about attracting, hiring good people, training them. What are there any other kind of keys to success in getting that first 50, like really solid nucleus that you can build on?
I think you have to be very fair. I think that's the most important thing. I think especially when you're small, I don't know, like I think a lot of the boutiques, they still run a lot of on like the favoritism, you know, the decision making is not clear or it's not fast, maybe, you know, it can be a bit bureaucratic, I think, or political, you know. I think with the for us, you know, fairness is, you know, is really key. You know, we treat everybody the same. The decision making is really consistent, you know, across the business. And that's, I think, what you gotta do.
Yeah, it's linked to keeping your staff turnover low as well, you know, like what Alex just said. I think it's absolutely crucial you have low staff turnover to start with, because those first 50 people should be the champions, the future champions of your business, the people that love the business more than anything. They've played a massive part in the growth of the business. They're so proud to work for the company. I think that's so, so crucial. So I think you've got to reward them for their loyalty in joining you. Give them a really clear vision about what's going to happen in their career, and then back them when they hit the targets, and let them grow into the leaders you want them to be. Don't hire people above them, you know, to limit their career path. And then you won't have a staff turnover, and you'll have people who are super loyal because the dream you sold them at the beginning comes true, and they, you know, they feel a big part of it.
Let's talk about this career path, because one thing I've seen with the fastest growing companies is that people are really pushed, and assuming they're hitting their goals, they're promoted quickly. There's no like arbitrary time, like, well, you know, your review's not for another 8 months, so you can't get, you know, a promotion yet or whatever. It's as soon as someone is hitting those milestones, they're progressing. And whereas other firms are, which don't grow as quickly, tend to be more like, well, she's not quite ready yet, or there's like a lot of deliberation and delay over promoting people. But I think the challenging bit is, and I love the fact you guys recruit, promote people from within. You're not bringing in a manager over the top of someone necessarily, if you have anyone in the business who could step up.
Yeah.
But what if you're the individuals in the business aren't ready and they're not quite performing where you need them to be at the pace that you're planning to grow, then, you know, you've got a bit of a dilemma there, right? Like you're projecting that we want to build out this team to, you know, to X number of people within Y timescale. But the performance isn't quite there. What's the decision look like in that case?
I think we're quite lucky because we have, like, you know, we have already like a pretty diverse and structured team. So if a manager is a little bit behind, we can still hire, but maybe not the departments. And usually, you know, if a team goes a little bit quiet or the manager is not there ready yet, we actually have the time to wait a little bit and maybe wait the next quarter or even 6 months, you know, because we have the diversity, we have the options to hire different places. And if don't, you know, we actually do the job ourselves, right? You know, that's the beauty of having two MDs, really, because we can share the workload, we can still manage team directly, and we can take actually, you know, consultant ourselves and give a little bit of that room to that manager to grow, really, and be a little bit patient.
Yeah, I think it's not so much of a dilemma, I don't think, for us. I think if you've got your milestones and your targets correctly kind of calibrated, most people that hit them are going to be ready, right? And you should know what those milestones are, especially if you've scaled a business before. And if you get the odd person that's not ready, then I'll promote them anyway, because the message that it sends out to the rest of the business, you know, is that you stick to what you've agreed previously. And I think that's hugely important. And like Alex said, if someone struggles a little bit after they've been promoted, well, maybe we can have a conversation with them and not quite pump as many headcount into their particular team and divert it into other areas. But I think most people that hit the targets, if they're properly set, they're ready. Nobody's maybe ever ready to become a manager for the first time, but they're basically ready and we can help them. And I think it's so important that you just have that fairness that Alex talked about before, and the consistency in the business that if you do what we asked, we're going to do what we say. And then we can deal with it after that, you know.
I think for us,
amazing.
We're quite good with actually the management layer, I think, are really helping. And we're honestly super patient, you know, maybe compared to couple of years ago. I think we chilled a little bit. And again, like I think that the first experience, honestly, of scaling the business up to 200 plus people, that is really beneficial. I think this time around, we're way, way calmer. I think I'm way more patient. And again, you did it before. This time feels just much easier, to be honest. You know, at least for me, it feels like really, really much easier.
On that note, looking back, what would you say was a mistake that maybe you made the first time around that you've learned from and changed your approach this time?
For me, I think we didn't really understand. I think, you know, for the first time, you know, I work for Hayes, Matt for Robert Waters. I think when you work for this kind of company, you can't really hire from competitor. You know, it's really difficult to set that business to a competitor. I think in our previous company, I think we got really good at selling, and we just got a bit mesmerized by experienced recruiter without really realizing that maybe we were hiring people that they had a nice resume, but they peaked already in their career. So I think we hired people that peaked already, and we had such high expectation on those people. And when, you know, when they joined, they weren't really up to, you know, the standard that we wanted. I think that was a mistake, I think, not understanding the peak of people, really. And I think also maybe we hire a bit too much, maybe externally as well. Yeah. I think, you know, we could have, we did a lot of mismatching, you know, maybe a manager that was doing, I don't know, accounting and finance. We put him to manage a sales and marketing team, you know. So because we wanted to hit that growth and we were maybe not patient enough, and we could sell and we could attract people, then I think maybe we rushed a little bit in a couple of cases. And in that case, it just backfired, you know, the people were not good. You know, the team was not happy because they didn't bring that know-how, really.
Yeah.
So I think this time around, we're much more, a bit more conservative, I think, on hiring from competitor. We still want to hire the best people around, but I think we're a bit more understanding of, again, the peak, and we understand which best recruiter work for us. And
it's funny because... Yeah, I mean, someone can have 10 years experience on paper, but it might be 1 year's experience repeated 10 times.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed. And they could have just been at the stage in their career where they've just slightly lost the hunger, and, you know, we're hungry. So we need to hire people that have the ambition that kind of matches our expectations, and you don't always get that, you know.
Amazing. All right, guys. Well, look, I've really enjoyed meeting you. I'm going to be tracking your growth and let's keep in touch and maybe do it again, you know, when you're at your next phase and you'll have new things to share.
Perfect. Yeah, we enjoyed it. Thank you for having us on the podcast. It was great fun.
Cheers. Thanks.
All right. Pleasure. Awesome. Alex, Matt, great to meet you. Have a great day.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you so much for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. If you've enjoyed the show, the best way you can show your support is to click that subscribe button. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.